Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the bit where we test the levels. Two, I don't know, do you like jokes by guys called Nick? I've got two Nick jokes.
Not adverse to them.
Oh, okay. This is Nick Helm. What I did with these jokes was, because the jokes from this year's Edinburgh Fringe were so poor, I did a search for the best jokes ever from the Edinburgh Fringe.
Right.
And Nick Helm did this in 2011. He says, I needed a password 8 characters long, so I picked Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. No? This is one from Nick Cody in 2015.
No, you didn't give me long enough to let it settle.
Ah, do you want to do it again?
No, I just need a second.
Yeah. What do you reckon?
I don't know.
No, I'm not sure about that.
It's like kind of clever.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about these one-liners per se. Crash Investigations.
I prefer like a bit. I like a bit.
Crash Investigations is my favourite TV show. I've seen every episode. Here's a tip for new viewers. If the show starts with the pilots being interviewed, it'll be a boring episode.
No.
Unfortunately
not. I think you know what you need to do.
I'll tell you who did a good bit, and that is Bill Burr.
Burr's funny.
He is funny. And this struck me as something we've all thought at one time or another. You watch a detective show, and about 15 minutes into the show, they catch the guy, and you look at your watch and think, there's 40 minutes to go. There's no way he's the guy. Somebody else is the guy. He's not the guy. Why are they trying to convince me that he's the guy and they've caught him?
It doesn't strike me as funny.
No, but it's true.
It's good.
It's funny because it's true.
It's a good little like thing. I've noticed.
Yeah, it's a bit. It's what you said.
But it's not like a funny bit.
There was a bit somebody like Seinfeld, may have been Seinfeld, did years and years ago, where they said, what's the etiquette? And again, it's just true rather than particularly funny in itself. What's the etiquette?
So is this the part of the podcast where we just say things that are not that funny?
Correct.
And also not even things that we are saying. They're just you saying stuff that other people think is not that funny.
No, other people think it's funny.
You're saying it in a not funny way.
Yeah.
So rather what the people should do is just listen to the people who say it funny.
Yeah, you won't find it because it was years ago, and I'm not even sure it was Seinfeld. By all means, look for it on the internet. Waste half your morning looking for this, and of course you'll find something else in the interim. But he was just saying, what's the etiquette when somebody is at a cash machine putting their code in, and you're waiting to go on the cash machine? How far behind them?
Four steps.
Four steps, has that been established?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Ruthie, we're coming to an interesting time because when you go to university, we're going to be chronicling your life at university, hopefully.
Yeah, you're allowed to say that, though. Is that not embargoed?
No, it's not embargoed. People know you're going to university because we've established that. It's in 3 weeks' time. Is it 3 weeks? About 3 weeks before you go?
29th, so about 4 weeks.
About 4 weeks before you go. We are going to be chronicling your time at university on the podcast, obviously, because you'll be there at university. And at the moment, we're reaching that point where I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, that we're just about myself, your mother, and you, we're just about facing up to the fact, because you've had to sort your accommodation out for a start, and we're just about facing up to the fact that this huge change, it will be a huge change, because you've been with us, just the two of us, for the last couple of years, haven't you, since the others all moved out.
Yeah.
So we're just about to go into this huge change. You've had a bit of a problem with your accommodation, and you're now going to be in a twin room in a nice place, but you've had to Tell me what, well, you were telling me in the car, it's fascinating. You've had to do, it's almost like a dating site. You've had to talk about the sort of person you want to share your room with sort of person you are.
Yeah, it's trying to match you up with someone who has a similar lifestyle to you. So you've got to answer like a lot of questions about whether you are okay with having alcohol in your room, whether you're okay with someone eating in the room, whether you're very tidy, medium tidy, or actually quite messy, or whatever, just questions like that.
Is it just to sort of go for medium on most of them? That
you... Well, a lot of them are like yes or no. I think they've made it that way rather than being like yes, no.
And one, two, three, four, five.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think it just would not work. So a lot of them are like yes or no, really have to make you face up to what you want and what you want to live like and stuff. And then the hardest bit is that you have to describe yourself in three words, Ruthie, which is awful.
Away you go, three words.
Honestly, so I was doing it in the car. I got friendly and respectful, didn't
friendly,
I?
Friendly, respectful.
And then number three is proving a
well, we were going to say cheerful.
Oh, yeah. No, because that's what I've put as what I would like, who I, the type
well,
of person I would
like
to live
don't
with.
You, really? I mean, that's what
I
you want.
I want them to be nicer.
You want to be nicer than you.
Yeah, yeah. Way nicer.
Yes, but you're...
I don't think you do need to be slightly different. Like, I don't think it would work if the person was entirely like you.
Mm.
Well, then maybe it would. I think the whole thing about, like, opposites attract and, like, differences make people better friends and better relationships is kind of all not true. But I think that people get on best with people who are just like them.
But that's going to be... because you've been in your own room, in your own home with your mum and dad, who... To be honest, do a bit of the clearing up and all that sort
of
thing.
Oh, yeah, no, I agree.
You recognise all that. Because it's going to be that big sort of life change, it's still, I can recognise it's a real period of uncertainty for you because initially you weren't happy with the idea of sharing a room. You can change if you really can't get into it.
Yeah, after about three weeks.
3 weeks
if you because I suppose they can't keep you in a room. If you're really, really not getting along, the person could be mental, like they could be like an absolute basket case, so they're not going to keep you in a room with someone who you really can't get along with. It's not like
it's
that
not setting stone.
And so many people drop out of university in the first few weeks and decided they want to take a gap year or do other stuff or just don't enjoy university, want to move universities, move courses, whatever. There will be rooms free. Yeah.
And because you and lots of people are going through this huge change, the newspapers, as always, have been very helpful telling us how to cope with this change.
I think the best thing is like genuinely just not to think about it that much. I'm just not thinking about it until I get there.
No.
Because I think that sometimes...
But it's not just you, it's for me and your mother as well.
But I mean, if people start preparing, then that's what makes you more nervous.
Well, let me tell you what the Sunday Times said. The headline was, "Discuss how often you will keep in touch. How young people negotiate the transition to university depends on many factors, from maturity and mental health to whether they're perfectionists or flexible," according to Dr. Nihara Krauser, who's a consultant clinical psychologist. "It's important to see it as a development stage that requires time and learning," she says. So her advice is not to ignore it completely.
Honestly, I think the best advice with a lot of major life changes is ignore it completely.
Well, that's what you're saying.
Therapist would probably be like, oh my gosh.
Yes, she's a consultant clinical psychologist, so let's accept that she might know more about this than you. She says, "Encourage the development of autonomy, responsibility and independence." Fair enough. "This comes from gradually changing our role." This is talking to parents now. "This comes from gradually changing our role to being supporters, but not rescuers or monitors." So, in other words, we have to be supporting you.
In other words, supporters, not rescuers.
Yes, like that. But you know what I mean? It's a changing role, because now we would have said to you, if you're out and you need a lift home, just give us a call. We'll be right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, which we're not able to say when you're at university, I presume. But if you phone me at university and say a real crisis, I've got to support you through the crisis, but not help you completely out of it. I think that's what she's saying. Patrick Lehman, who's a professor of psychology and the Dean of Education at King's College London's Institute of Psychiatry, says the focus in mental health is to help students avoid a sense of loneliness. Meeting new people...
I suppose that's why twin rooms are actually better. Mum was saying she's quite glad because she says that I won't go into my room and just cry and be upset that I'm away from her. Yeah. And in America, everyone is in shared rooms.
Yeah.
You know, so it's got like a precedent.
Yeah.
Well, people used to be, didn't they?
Let's hope. Meeting new people, realising for the first time maybe that you're not top of your class anymore.
Oh, did that at college.
Did you?
Yeah.
The way of working
it's
is totally...
It's the fish in the pond thing. You're a big fish in a little pond. Well, when you're in primary school, they're always like, big fish, little pond. Then you go to high school and they say, oh, you'll be a little fish in a big pond. Mm. And then actually... as you grow up, you're like, oh, wow, no, I was still quite a big fish in a little pond. And then when you get to university, I think that's the first time where you truly are.
You're just swimming with all the other fish who are about the same.
In a stream.
In a stream or a school.
A school.
So,
how apt.
How apt indeed. Meeting new people, realising for the first time maybe that you're not at the top of your class anymore, that the way of working... Now, this is interesting, that this... You've got to be more of a self-starter, haven't you?
Oh, you've got to be, like, really self-motivated.
Yeah. That the way of working is totally different, can all be a concern. And this is what's been concerning me, because since you've been on holiday, or since you've come back from your holiday, you have, all right, a couple of days you were chilling, but then you seem to... When you had A-level work to do, you worked very, very hard, and you were off at the library and all that sort of thing. Mm. But it seems... if there isn't that deadline on you, you
but when
drift
you're at
off.
University, you get work set for you.
Yeah. So you think you're not concerned about that?
Not massively, no.
You know, the stuff you have to do.
I'm
yourself.
Generally okay with yeah. saying
if they
do
say
the work.
These are sort of reading, these are books you have to read.
Oh yeah, no, I'll do that.
You read
yeah.
them and everything.
I think
I know
so.
I
yeah.
say to you sometimes, you should read this book.
No, that's completely different, though.
That's me, isn't it? You won't read it. Encourage them, this is what I've got to do, encourage them, this is me encouraging you, Ruth, to decide whether that fear is real and they can do something about it or whether it's hypothetical.
Mm.
Yeah, so I'm encouraging you now. The other thing that all the papers have been doing is everybody seems to be very concerned about what students... We used to always laugh about the pot noodles and all that. And I sort of lived, when I was a student, I sort of lived on steak and kidney pies. Steak and kidney pies and baked beans. That's more or less...
Were you buying steak and kidney pies like from a bakery?
Hmm.
Yeah.
And baked beans.
I didn't know whether you were like making a steak and kidney pie, and then I was like, wow, that's quite adventurous yeah,
that
for a uni student.
It certainly would.
I'm catered in my first year.
Yeah, you are.
You literally don't have to worry about it.
Well, let's hope it's all
due
right.
to the twin room situation.
Yeah, and I assume that because you're catered and because it's university and because it's now 2019, there'll be lots of vegan and vegetarian options, you would have thought.
You have to, I had to say what my dietary requirements were.
And what did you say?
Pescatarian.
Oh, was that an option?
It wasn't an option, you just typed it in. You typed everything in. It wasn't a drop-down list.
So the other thing that that all the papers are doing, because they don't want students eating pot noodles, is giving you 10-minute recipes.
There's like Jamie Oliver's 15-minute things that take about 45 to prepare and an hour to cook.
Yeah. Well, Feeds 4... Cost £10, easy and cheap meals for students was a feature in the Sunday Times. I looked through, they nearly all had chicken in them, because I presume that's
the cheapest.
Yeah, that's the cheapest meat. But the only one I could see...
Not cheaper than no meat.
No, well, this is the only one I could see that would be suitable for you. 10-minute peanut butter noodles. How does that sound? You like peanut butter, you like noodles.
Yeah, but would it be like... I don't like stuff that's too, like, dense.
Well, it's 3 tablespoons of smooth peanut butter, 4 tablespoons of soy sauce. Oh, that's all right, lots of salty for you. 2 garlic cloves crushed, 2 to 3 spring onions, 2 tablespoons of agave nectar, or A-G-A-V.
See, I'm not buying that from the supermarket, am I?
I don't know what it is.
Like, the rest of it is good, because you would already kind of have that stuff in, you know, peanut butter.
Well, my view is leave out...
Although, I probably wouldn't buy peanut butter. Because I don't eat it that often when I'm at home, really.
Basically, with these recipes, anything that you can't pronounce, don't buy.
No, exactly.
Just put the other
agave.
Stuff in. Yeah, agave or agave, not sure.
I think it's agave, but yeah. I would never buy that.
But you're being catered, so that's...
For the first year, yeah,
for the
yeah.
first year, and after that...
I don't know how much you end up cooking anyway, though, even if you are catered.
Well, you're fine. It's exciting, isn't it? I mean, we're looking at it with trepidation, you know, both sides, me and you, but it is exciting. And next year we'll be keeping everybody in touch with how it's going. And you'll be honest about it, won't you? You'll be honest about what's not going well and what is going well.
But then again, like, I do find... I don't know whether it's, like, maybe a British thing because it's, like, stiff upper lip or whatever, but sometimes if I acknowledge, like, something's not good or that something's upsetting me, then it makes me more upset about it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I've seen that.
Whereas if you kind of pretend... It's like Tom...
Tom Hanks?
Hanks, yeah. I was saying Hanks and then I just started to stutter. Tom Hanks does this thing where he says, act as if, you know, act as if you're a confident person, act as if you're the best looking person in the room, and then you just become that person.
Wow.
So sometimes I feel like if you say, oh, I'll act as if everything's fine, I'll act as if I'm happy, then you actually just become happy. This is probably another thing where therapists would be like, that is the most damaging thing you could do.
Tom Hanks, who you worship, is this
Tom Hanks,
your religion,
like the
Church of Hanks?
I'll tell you what, it's better than the Church of Scientology.
Yeah, probably.
Run by another prevalent crew, Tom.
Tom.
Oh, Tom. I ruined that.
No,
damn it.
Nearly. Now, we got a phenomenal amount of emails this
week.
Did
we genuinely?
We did genuinely.
You're not just scrolling to the bottom and going back through the old ones?
Pages and pages of emails. One of the emails raised an issue that we were talking about last week in a fairly jokey way. You know that joke that was supposed to be the best joke at Edinburgh?
Yeah.
Where I keep shouting out cauliflower and broccoli, I think I've got florets, right?
Yes.
And the Tourette Society sort of objected to it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And we thought, I don't know, what did we think?
I can't even remember what we said. I think we said, yeah, I get
it's
it.
It's a pretty rubbish joke. Why are you bothering? And Gary Robson has written to us to tell us why they're bothering at the Tourette Society. Says, hi, guys, love the show. Not a crony, but he says he came across me first in The Guardian when he used to write a column for The Guardian. So we got a Guardian reader here. He says, just to go back to your comments on the Tourette's joke, first of all, Tourette's is a neurological condition. However, I mainly wanted to draw your attention to the work of Jess Tom, T-H-O-M, a brilliant performer and commentator with Tourette's. And
I think I know who she is, you know.
Do you?
I think I've seen her. I think she's been on stuff that I've seen, or maybe the news or something.
Mm. Anyway, she's commented on the situation and says this places it in a wider perspective. So I followed the link to Jess Tom and what she said about the joke. She says, on Monday, Dave announced the winner of their annual competition to find the best joke of the Edinburgh Fringe. An expert panel, she's put expert in inverted commas, obviously, selected a shortlist, and then the great British public voted for their favourite. The winning joke...
I didn't know you could vote.
Yeah, apparently you can. The winning joke was a pun about Tourette's from the comedian Olaf Falafel. And she says, here's the joke. We know the joke now. She says, before I go any further, I want to get a few things straight. I'm not personally offended by this joke. I'm not calling for an apology, although Tourette's Action are calling for an apology. They're the Tourette's people. I have no issue with Olaf. This is definitely not the worst Tourette's joke I've ever heard. It's not even the worst I've heard this week. I don't think there are subjects that should be off limits for comedy if they're handled appropriately. I'm not the laughter police. Anyway, there was loads of Twitter on this. When the Tourette's Action said they were calling for an apology.
Yeah.
Loads of people on Twitter said, you know, have a sense of humour, get lost. And there were some quite vile tweets, to be honest, having a go at the Tourette's. It was mostly sort of political critics gone mad, that sort of thing. She says, number one, I'm editing this because it's about 12 pages long, her discussion of this one-line joke.
No, but it's an important issue.
I think it's interesting on this. It's not the joke, it's the platform. The joke was a fleeting moment in one of thousands of Edinburgh shows. Without this award and the associated media attention, it would have had very limited reach. Number two, where the laughter sits. The laugh in Olaf's joke doesn't sit right. It relies on the cliche that having Tourette's is just about shouting random words, which appears to be endlessly amusing to people who have no first-hand experience of the condition.
Dad, I know this is off topic and obviously not great for a podcast because it's a visual, but have you seen the rain?
Yes, we're recording this.
I've not got a coat. You know what, actually, I've not got my shoes. I left my shoes in the car.
Oh, did you really? Well, by the time we've finished, let's hope this rain has...
I can't describe to you how it's biblical.
Those of you who have the serious neurological condition, which we call Tourette's, don't worry, the rain is way more important than Ruth's.
No, I really do. I do want to hear about this, but I couldn't concentrate, and I want to be able to give you my full attention while you're talking about the really important Tourette's Action Society. But look at the rain! It's like out of a film. You know they used to add milk to rain.
Anyway, yes, they did. In
Singing in the Rain,
they added milk.
You told me that. I don't know why I'm telling you it.
So anyway, she says it's not... people have no first-hand experience. I can see exactly what she's saying. What she's saying, basically, is that... In itself, she's not going to make a big deal about the joke, but the fact is it just plays into that misunderstanding of Tourette's, which is a condition that's much more... It's a disabling condition, which we ought to...
And it also shouldn't be taken the mick out of. It shouldn't be used as a punchline.
if you handle it right, it can be.
Yeah.
It's just that this one-line joke is just neither here nor there, really.
Yeah. Anyway. And also, I'm sure that people who have Tourette's would be happy to make the jokes themselves.
I think a lot of times... That's what she's doing, yeah. Because she is a stand-up.
And it's done by people who don't understand the condition.
Yes. Also, what she's particularly annoyed about is the fact that... I'll read you what she says. People with Tourette's can only share in the laughter if we can get into the room and stay there. Olaf's show was in a non-wheelchair accessible venue.
Oh, for God's
sake.
Which
means that I and many other people whose mobility is affected by Tourette's wouldn't have been able to get in. And he didn't offer any relaxed performances. I think they do at theatres these days. Olaf's joke is far from unique. These jokes have a cumulative impact on the Tourette's community. You can't have Tourette's. I've never heard you shout or swear, people say to me. It's not people like me who've had Tourette's for a long time and are accepting of their tics who will be most affected by this. It's the children being diagnosed this week, the bullied teens going back to school. And then there's loads more. She does say some comedy shows have addressed Tourette's quite well. For example, there's an episode of South Park in which Cartman pretends to have Tourette's so he can get away with swearing. But this backfires when he starts shouting out personal secrets. This episode was well researched. In my view, the laugh was on Cartman for faking it rather than on Tourette's itself. So it's the same thing about punching up or punching down. And I think with comedy, it stands. You can make jokes about anything, I think, but as long as you're careful to be punching up and to be, you know, to be.
And also, it's about involving the people who the joke is about or
See, Bill
the joke
Burr,
is with.
I mentioned Bill Burr. He does a whole load of fat shaming stuff, but he does it in Texas in front of an audience. Texas being the fattest state in the United States of America, and that's fat. And he does it in front of the audience there, and does it shamelessly, and says, "You know, I'm fat shaming here. That's what I'm doing." And I think it works. I think it's all about tone, isn't it? Really.
Yeah. And also, if it's funny.
Yeah,
I think that's what's the real clincher is that often they make the jokes and they're not funny, so why are you doing it? Then you're just doing it to be offensive.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So we'll read some of these other emails that we've got. Some of them quite interesting, some are not quite as interesting, but we'll read them. Martin Leo says, in last week's episode, you mentioned the words we use to refer to an unspecified big number. Do you remember the 40 days and 40 nights?
Yeah.
Things like squillions. These are properly called indefinite hyperbolic numerals.
Right, so there we go. That was what, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah. Indefinite hyperbolic numerals and have the fun property that even though they aren't real numbers, everyone agrees that a bazillion is more than just a zillion, which is bigger than umpteen. And there's more on this at www.theallusionist.org /allusionist/zillions if you're interested.
I like The Allusionist.
Yeah.
That's the podcast, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah. With Helen Zaltzman.
Helen Zaltzman, yeah.
Yeah.
Going back to the late night pizza question, Martin says, I was given a sandwich toaster before I went to uni, and it was a real asset.
Yeah, everyone says get a sandwich toaster.
Ah, great for weekend. See, we're giving these tips for students already. We haven't even started yet. Great for weekend brunches, post-pub grub, or entertaining bored friends at 4 PM. Everyone loves a toasted sandwich.
It's true. Everyone loves a toasted. Although, can I say something about the toasted sandwich maker? I would prefer just a farm and grill, you know, or a flat one or one with ridges or whatever. Because the ones with the toasty ones where it splits them in half and it's like two pockets, the bread never really truly fits in it. So then you're left with two pockets and then a bit on around the outside. And I think you're better off with just going for a grill type.
I agree
one.
With you. And also those traditional sort of Breville sandwich, toasted sandwich makers, the filling gets...
It gets
really hot,
and it gets shoved into that one, the pocket section, rather than being evenly spread and thing.
Yeah. No, you're right. Tony,
but I think a grill thing, you can make loads of stuff on those. You can do chips and stuff.
Mm. Tony Gould says, "Hi, Ruth and Martin. I have a suggestion."
Hi, Tony.
He says, "I have."
So you have to if you're on children's television. Hi, Tony.
Is that what you're going for, a career in children's television? I could see you doing that, to be honest.
I'd quite enjoy it, I think.
Yeah,
that or dressing up as a Disney character.
Mm. I have a suggested solution for Ruth's bedtime phone charging problem, says Tony. use a portable battery.
No, that's not the same thing.
Well, let me tell you what his argument. It fits easily on the bed. During the day, charge the battery. You can buy a traditional monolith design, or now they sell them in shapes like unicorns and Pokemon. I also offer a cure for insomnia. Just read this email, says Tony. So that's his solution, your great dragon's
den idea. That is not the same thing at all. Because also, I don't want to have to be charging something in the day to then charge at night to then remember to put it back on the charger in the day. That's not that is not the same thing.
But also, somebody did tweet me a picture of this Dragon's Den device, which you've invented, which sadly somebody has already invented. It's a row of different plastic things, and you just fit your cable into the plastic.
I'd need see it.
No rubber suckers involved.
No, because I think that that's a bigger thing. I want just a small thing that barely you can even see on the thing. I on the table. I still believe that this will make me rich.
Robert Oberti writes to us, says, "Dear Martin and Ruth, I wouldn't worry about the apparent lack of emails you're receiving. We're all still here." Well, this week, a phenomenal number. Enjoying your exchanges.
If you do want to get in touch.
Well, we'll tell him in a sec, because we've got lots more to go
through. Was this not the last one?
No. He says, "We're all still here enjoying your exchanges, but I will say that you, Martin, don't mention your Spotify playlist nearly enough." Brian Long, who is a crony.
Brian Long's one of your actual mates.
He's one of
them. That's like having one of my friends just email it.
We'd love to have your friends email it. Champagne cork inflicted injuries. How much more distraught would the young man from Love Island have been if the cork that caught him in the eye hadn't popped out of a bottle of fine vintage champagne, but from a cheap bottle of supermarket Carver? The shame of it. He also says, "It was interesting listening to Ruth talk about the drugs culture at Leeds Festival. It's certainly come a long way from watching some long-haired bloke in loon pants weighing out and selling little bags of weed in Leeds University Union Bar circa 1973. He says, "It's okay, I never inhaled." And that's
I believe that when I see it,
that's
Brian.
A reference to Bill Clinton.
What he did?
Well, he was at Oxford, and he said that he had drugs when he was at Oxford University, but never inhaled.
What?
It seemed to make... Well, people were passing around a joint.
Yeah.
And he...
Oh, so he just, pretended, he didn't take it back.
That's what he said. Karen Faith says, "Hi, Martin and Ruth," and has sent me a marvellous documentary. It's about Russian gymnasts.
I love a documentary about Russian gymnasts.
Well,
that 30 for 30 one, I could quote along with that.
This is a BBC one. "A brilliant doc," says Karen, and she says, "Ruth, congratulations on the exam results and good luck at uni."
Thanks.
Stephen Walker says, "Here's one from the United States. Thank you for keeping me both entertained as well as generally informed about a wide array of UK topics during my commute into New York. I'm originally from Manchester, so really enjoy the northern flavour." I think it's a reference to you always standing up for the North.
Love the North.
Love the North. "And as the father of two daughters, just a couple of years older than Ruth, I've recommended your podcast to many of their peers." So he's actually spreading the word. The feedback
is paired.
Yes, he said. No, don't mention that. The feedback has been very positive for sure, especially when it comes to Ruth's insights. Oh, thanks, Ruth. Have a great time at school, as they call it in America. And if you haven't done so already, I think you have actually. Check out The Clash. He says, "The only band that really matters."
I haven't really listened to The Clash at all. I listened to The Cure a bit, but not The Clash.
Well, they're on my...
Oh, my God.
They are. We might...
But they're also just a band.
They're just...
You think stuff doesn't exist unless it's on your Spotify playlist?
Well, Stephen Walker says they're more than just a band. He said they're the only band that really matters. And he says, P.S., I was 16 in 1977. That's why I love The Clash so much, I think, because it's explanation there. Richard Taylor, another one that absolutely enjoys it. He's been subscribing since it started. I play bits of it on my show on Talk Radio in the middle of the night, whenever he's fast asleep, except Richard Taylor, because he listens to it there. And he says...
Has he got insomnia or something?
Maybe.
The insomniac audience is your main one.
And the Far Eastern audience.
Truckers as well.
Trucker, yeah, we do. We have at least one trucker, Carve the Trucker, who gets in touch with us every week. She says, I love the dynamic between you two, which is obviously purely for the microphone.
Oh, yeah, we don't speak.
No dynamic at home.
Silence.
I love the dynamic between you two, and you are a great double act, he says. So bless him for that.
Like Ant and Dec.
Yeah. Congratulations to Ruth on her A-level results.
With less drugs, though.
And I hope that the podcast still continues in some format once Ruth starts at university. Well, it is. We're going to chronicle a year at university, how that works. But also talk about some of the topics, I think, as well. Because that's always interesting, to get your take on what's going on, etc. So thank you, Richard. And finally, Matt, who enjoyed it again. Particularly, Richard, before we leave it, he's also cleared up one thing from last week. He says, Martin asks whether you can drive if you're blind in one eye. You definitely can. As my 85-year-old father was born with no sight in his left eye, drove for about 60 years, and in his younger life drove lorries and coaches.
Oh, what?
I wondered if there was some, you know...
If
I think as long as you can read the number plate, that's the test they do for your eyesight. You're going to read the number plate of a car sort of 20 yards down the road or something. So he says, yes, you can. He says, on that interesting fact, I'll bid you adieu. And Matt says, particularly interested to hear you love Bob Mortimer on Would I Lie to You? His appearances on there are legendary. I must catch up on some of those.
Yeah, I told you. There's compilations on
YouTube
where it's just Bob Mortimer's stories, and they're brilliant.
They are.
You would love them.
I've seen a couple of them, and I do like them. Have you seen his fishing show on BBC Two?
This got nominated for a BAFTA.
Yeah, it's had great reviews.
I haven't actually seen it, though.
Me neither. There's just too much to watch. There's too much. You know, once you're on Netflix, there's like tons of stuff to watch.
Has everyone watched the Harvey Weinstein documentary? Because that was really good.
That was really good.
Although, surprisingly, they didn't get Rose McGowan. That's who I wanted to hear.
Well, she obviously didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
You see, they got everybody who wanted to do it. And
anybody who
didn't want to do it didn't do it. And some people don't like talking about it on TV.
No, but Rose McGowan's been on TV and everything.
Yeah.
Like, she's done loads of
things.
Maybe
she didn't like the idea. I think some people are quite careful, and you should be as well, as to what the tone of the documentary is, what they're doing.
Because it did... Sometimes when they were speaking to the men who knew him back in the day, the ones that never quit especially, it did take on a slight kind of, wow, he was so brilliant turn, didn't you think?
Well, I mean,
because I know that he was talented, but when the women were saying, of course, like, he was talented, they weren't saying in such of, like, a, oh... Mm.
But I'm not sure how talented Harvey Weinstein was. You know, that was the great dialogue that came out, you know, when he got exposed and everything. Everybody said, oh, yeah, but look at those great films he produced. I look at films like Shakespeare in Love and My Left Foot, and I'm not sure whether My Left Foot was one of his, but he did movies
My
like
Left
that.
Foot was, yeah.
Yeah.
It came out the same time as Cinema Paradiso.
So Shakespeare in Love, My Left
Shakespeare in Love's a great film.
See, I don't think it's a great film. And The English Patient.
I've never seen it, but he also backed him, like, I've almost said Notting Hill then, and I didn't mean that. I meant Good Will Hunting. He also
another rubbish film.
Do not say Good Will Hunting is a rubbish film. Good Will Hunting is so many people's favourite film.
What his talent was, and it said it in the piece, his talent was jockeying to get awards, putting all that effort into getting these films Oscar nominated, so that it became the wisdom of the day that The English Patient, The English Patient's a great film. My Left Foot's
I've
a
never
brilliant
seen
film.
That.
They're not
Pulp Fiction, a genuine good film.
Yeah, Pulp Fiction.
I've not seen it.
Tarantino. But I don't think Pulp Fiction stands up that well.
Interesting,
I'm going to talk about a film from 1977 later that does stand up really well. But I'm not sure Weinstein had any talent other than schmoozing and
is a talent in itself.
Yes.
I think.
Yes, that is a talent in itself, and he had.
Yeah. But then it did... I think what was I found really interesting about the thing is that when women found out about it, even if they didn't completely come forward, even if they didn't maybe speak about as much as they should, or they took the non-disclosure agreements, which maybe they shouldn't have done in hindsight or whatever, they quit their jobs. They straight away, the older woman who was involved quit her job. Yeah.
The women they had on the programme.
But then all the men they had on the programme, none of them quit.
Yeah, well, one or two of them
Once again, women proving themselves the better sex.
I think the women quit because they couldn't work in that environment. And I can understand that entirely. But we only heard, that was the sort of narrative of the programme. We probably only heard from the women. We don't know what happened. We don't know how Gwyneth Paltrow got her job. We don't know how, you know, those others.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting anything, but there is the possibility still that, you know, they knew what a complete scumbag he was, but they wanted to be in Shakespeare in Love, which is a rubbish film. But
Shakespeare in Love is not a rubbish film.
Yeah.
Have you seen Shakespeare in Love?
Yeah, I saw Shakespeare in Love when it came out. I saw all those films when they
came out. Shakespeare in Love was good. We got shown Shakespeare in Love in my English class.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, yeah. I'd already seen it, but we did get shown it in class.
Pre-Weinstein days.
No, I mean, they would still show it now, I'm sure, but...
Yeah, I don't see any problem with
I get it, why those women would do that, though. Should have some music?
Yes. Well, I'm going to talk about rom-coms, which...
Oh, love them.
Yes, I know you love them, and I love them too. You don't get so many of them these days.
Not true rom-coms.
The Goodbye Girl was a film in 1977 written by Neil Simon, who's this brilliant, very witty writer in New York, that sort of New York Jewish sort of wit. And there's loads of it in this film. It was 1977, and Richard Dreyfuss won an Oscar for it. Basically, the plot is there's this girl, her boyfriend's a bit of a scumbag, they share a flat. He moves, goes somewhere else, leaves her, and without telling her, sublets the other room in the flat. So all of a sudden, one night, Richard Dreyfuss turns up. He's an actor. He's a bit annoying and everything. They hate each other at the start, obviously.
And then they fall in love.
And then they fall in love.
It sounds great.
You'd love it. You would absolutely love it. But
it's not... This is the problem with films like this, they're just not... If it's not on Netflix and it's not on the Sky Cinema thing... then you just don't watch it.
Anyway, he's an unsuccessful actor, and then towards the end of the movie, they live in there in New York, he gets offered to go to Hollywood, and he has to take it because it's for her career. And because she's been let down before, she assumes he's leaving her forever. So he, and that's why she's called the Goodbye Girl, because all her boyfriends have sort of left her, and she thinks she's going to get defecated upon from a great height once more. That's what the song's all about, and it's by a very 70s singer. It's very soppy, but I think you will get an idea of the movie from this.
Oh, it's hard believing the words you've heard before, but darling, you must trust them just once more.
That's Goodbye Girl by David Gates. Have you heard of David Gates? It's a bit romantic comedy-ish.
Yeah, it's a bit boring.
Don't you like it?
Bit soppy. Not much to it, is there?
No, there's not much to it. And the thing about...
I'm sure it's good in the back of a film, but just to listen to it, I'm not sure.
Well, it's a bit like the theme from Tootsie as well. You know, it's
Tootsie!
No, not that theme from Tootsie. You're thinking of the actual incidental music, you know, Tootsie, etc., etc. Dave Grusin, I think that, not Stephen Bishop, who did the sentimental song, which is a bit like David Gates' song.
Yeah, it is too sentimental, that song.
Okay. Have you heard of Bread?
Bread.
A group called Bread.
I
know you've heard of
lovely,
Bread.
Lovely, delicious, carby treat.
No, not the delicious carby treat, but the 1970s Hollywood band. No, well, that was David Gates' band. Born in 1940, still gigging, still doing gigs.
That is cool.
And he's nearly 80. Yours? Tell me about yours.
Mine is a song, it's a brand new song, by Bombay Bicycle Club, and it's called Eat, Sleep, Work, and then in brackets, Nothing But You.
A There you go. Eat, sleep, wake, nothing but you by Bombay Bicycle. Now, I've heard of Bombay Bicycle.
You've heard of Bombay Bicycle.
They've been going for ages.
Ages. So they started in 2005, but this is their first new music since 2014's number one selling album, So Long, See You Tomorrow, because they had a hiatus between 2016 and 2018. So they've been away from ages. They're an indie rock band from Crouch End in London, and the lead guy is a boy called Jack Steadman.
And we describe them as indie rock because I've heard the name on Six Music.
Well, they're named after the restaurant.
Well, there's a restaurant called the Bombay Bicycle Club.
There's a restaurant chain in America called Bombay Bicycle Club. It's got one in California and other places, but that's what they're named after.
Right. So when the BBC disappears altogether, they will become the BBC, the Bombay Bicycle Club.
Yeah, true.
It's interesting how many things that we've talked about on the podcast, you think, well, we've dealt with that, that'll go away now, and it's still in the papers every single week.
Because once we've dealt with something, it goes away.
It goes viral, doesn't it, really? But no, there's loads of stuff we think, oh, that's a big story in the paper, we'll look at it. Love Island, we've almost forgotten about Love Island, apart from you did bring up the champagne cork shock horror. But it's still in the news. This is the latest story about Love Island. Schools teaching new relationships and sex education, RSE. Did you do RSE at school?
I went to Catholic school as well.
Yeah.
So it's not, we wouldn't do anything.
No.
Anyway. We did like reproductive education, which is just like the science. And then
did you not do relationships at didn't all? Do, did we didn't do. Say...
We did a bit about sort of like the ethic, like religious ethics to do with relationships, but only a tiny bit. I honestly do think that it could have been like actually against the law to not teach us something, because we didn't do anything. So because I have friends who did you know, putting like a condom on a cucumber and stuff like that.
Did you not put a condom on a cucumber?
Nope.
So you're now eating salads and you're just eating just
raw,
just plain cucumbers, blimey. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the school's teaching.
No, I do think that it's. But I think it now has so been brought, bad. I think it's been brought in a lot more.
It's been brought in since you left.
Yeah, But I think it's brilliant because they do need to teach it.
Yeah, because it's definitely only been brought in over the last couple of years because we've had all the demonstrations, especially in Birmingham and outside. You know, schools with a lot of Muslims and that sort of thing.
That was about teaching. About gay?
Yes, no,
about
it's part
LGBT.
Of the it's part of the RSC
syllabus. Part of the
It is part of the syllabus. Anyway, schools teaching new relationship and sex education lessons have been warned that using clips from the reality television series Love Island, which some are using as a sort of illustrative of relationship things, could trigger body image anxiety in boys. The warning comes from the PSHE Association, that's the Personal Social and Health Education Association, which helps teachers plan for those sort of lessons. It comes after a report found that more than 200,000 UK children are unhappy with their lives, and boys are particularly at risk. The Good Childhood Report by the Children's Society, so everybody's having a go at this, said 1 in 12 boys aged 10 to 15 were unhappy with their appearance last year, and those impossibly ripped bodies that you see on Love Island are adding to this anxiety. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree. I do think it. I also think the bodies you see in Love Island are especially hard for boys because they don't diversify the men's bodies really at all. There was one guy last year who wasn't completely ripped, but apart from that, they're all like
ripped.
What's the G.I. Joe?
They're all G.I. Joe. Is that what you say?
I meant like action figures.
Yeah,
like they're all like that.
But did
like
you
Superman.
Just make up the expression? They're all G.I. Joe.
Yeah. I don't know, is G.I. Joe even ripped?
Well, I'm suspecting so, because he's...
They look like action figures, really.
But if you just made that up, they're all G.I. Joe. You've just coined something.
Oh, coined, there you go. Yeah, but then I would also say, like, on the flip side of that, it's a really, really good way to get children engaged in learning about relationships.
What, Love Island?
Yeah, brilliant. And there's a lot of examples of manipulative behaviour and stuff that is way more nuanced and is hard to teach without... real life examples, and compared to making fake films, a clip of Love Island is so much more exciting for a kid to watch that then it's kind of like swings and roundabouts. And if you're getting children to be engaged in something and learning about unhealthy behaviours in relationships, then maybe take the hit, do you know what I mean? And if they're going to have Love Island on TV anyway, you might as well use it for lessons.
Now, there's something specifically you wanted to raise this week.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about doctors and medicine and, like, feminism. So doctors generally believe women less when it comes to illnesses.
Who says that?
So there's a woman called Gabrielle Jackson who's written an article, but she's also written a book, which is called Pain and Prejudice, which is an investigation into gender bias in medicine. And so obviously she's done tons and tons of research into it. But there's also... There's been studies to do with how they don't use female mice in drug trials and those kind of things. So there's been other stuff. But anyway, so she's come out with this kind of thing. When she's been doing research into it, she's found that a lot of women, if they're suffering from chronic pain or any kind of pain like that, then the doctors are less likely to know about it because generally doctors don't really know that much about female bodies because all the studies have been done into male bodies and
what
stuff.
What about the female doctors?
Even gynaecologists. So
really?
She goes into...
Even female general practitioners. Because I'm just thinking about the last two or three times I've been to the doctors, I've seen a female practitioner.
Yeah, so it's not about whether the doctor is male or female. It's about all the research that goes into it, and when you're learning, you learn about male bodies, not female bodies. It's not actually about the doctor. It's not the doctor who... Well, the doctor is, but it's about gender bias in doctory?
In medicine.
Doctory?
No, medicine.
Doctory is not a word.
No.
It's about gender bias in medicine, not actual doctors, although that does play into it, is that doctors treat women less like they know
even
stuff.
Even women doctors?
Dr. Janine... Austin Clayton, the director of the US Office of Research, told the on Women's Health, that's important, on Women's Health, told the New York Times, we literally know less about every aspect of female biology compared to male biology. So she goes back centuries and finds it was like in the modern era, medicine switched its attention to the nervous system and then it blamed illness on weak nerves. You can see that in lots of period dramas. They're always going, my nerves, and that kind of thing. And then in the early 20th century, when the endocrine system was discovered, raging hormones became the chief source of blame. And then it also goes into a thing of we're less likely to listen to women about pain with things like endometriosis, which has become a really big story. So this
Emma Barnett has it. Become a big story.
But this woman, Gabrielle Jackson, was also diagnosed with it when she was 23, and that's why she started researching all these things.
I'll tell you what, if you want to raise awareness and raise money for a disease, make sure a celebrity has it,
yeah.
And then it becomes, you know, all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, true.
Yeah. I mean, I never knew the word endometriosis until Emma Barnett got it.
But that's the problem, is that you didn't know the word endometriosis. 1 in 10 women have it. If there was a severe chronic pain illness that 1 in 10 men have, then you would know the name of it. You would have always known the name of it.
Possibly.
I truly do believe that. I think what Emma Barnett's doing is really great and stuff. Like, I think you should be raising awareness about it. But then it also, this is the bit that I found really interesting. This is why I wanted to bring it up. So at the heart of most of the illnesses that we tend to ignore, stuff like endometriosis, is because they're related to women's reproductive processes like menstruation and pregnancy, breastfeeding and menopause. Attention is stripped away from the pain of it because there it's a sign of women fulfilling their ultimate purpose, which is children. And so that's why we kind of ignore it in a lot of ways. I just thought it was so terrifying that even doctors didn't know that much about women's bodies.
Well, there's a cheerful subject to end on, endometriosis. I think now we've mentioned it. Well, I was going to say, now we've mentioned it on our podcast, you know, action will be taken. What's the meme of the week?
Oh, but before we say meme...
Oh, we ought to give the address out for the email.
That's what I was doing.
Oh, go ahead.
if you want to email us...
We've demonstrated that we take them seriously, read them, etc., etc.
Really, yeah, genuinely.
We love them.
Then you can email at martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. It's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. And just one more time, because Dad likes to say it three times.
martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. And if there's anything you want to raise that we've talked about in this podcast, we'd like to correct them, like the one-eyed thing, the champagne cork thing.
Uh-huh. And then if you go over to Spotify... then you can listen to the songs from this week in full and all the other songs from all the other weeks. If you type in Martin and Ruth or Ruthie, me and my dad, then it will come up with the playlist. And you can also listen to the podcast on Spotify.
Hmm. Meme of the week, Ruth.
Yes. So this is someone's tweet that's been turned into a meme. Remember when you were little and you'd fall on the trampoline and everyone would keep jumping so you couldn't get back up? That's exactly how adult life feels.
That's so true. That's another of those things like those things that we did at the start that aren't particularly funny as such.
No, not funny as such, yeah.
But they're true. Excellent.
Not funny, but true.
Not funny, but true. And if you want more of that sort of stuff, we'll be back next week.
Mm-hmm.